This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Applied Botanics. Applied Botanics offers a great line of CBD oils, including a line for pets. Now, I've been using their products for the last 2 months. I really wanted to test it out before I started promoting it to listeners of this podcast, and I have to say, I experienced some great benefits. They have five different products, which include Comfort, Focus, Recovery, Tranquility, and Vitality. The three that I utilized the most were Comfort, Focus, and Tranquility. Comfort really provided me with stress and anxiety relief. I just started a new job 2 months ago, so between that and the fact that we're still living in a pandemic, Comfort really slowed things down for me and at the end of the day, kept that anxiety and stress at bay. Their Focus line also helped me during podcasts. It helped me to really focus on what my guests are saying, which enables me to ask the important questions and really pull back the layers of who they are. And finally, and possibly my favorite that I felt great benefits from is Tranquility. I take it 30 minutes or so before bed, and it really helps deliver me into that deeper sleep faster than I would without it. I wake up feeling refreshed and ready to take on the day. Now, oftentimes people are skeptical of CBD oil, especially when it comes to the price. But whether you're curious about CBD or have used CBD products before, you will find that Applied Botanics CBD is nearly half the cost of other brands. Their thoughts are that using CBD should not require a payment plan. On top of that, listeners of this podcast can get an additional 30% off their first purchase using the code word POPGOPROJECT at checkout. So head over to appliedbotanics.com where you can learn more about all their products. And if you decide to make a purchase, use code word POPGOPROJECT for 30% off. Applied Botanics. Live healthy and happy. My guest today is a dear friend of mine. I call him a musician turned entrepreneur. He seemed to have lived seven different lives so far and hopes to have seven more. He's been in successful cover bands, original bands, and he currently manages a few bands local to the northeastern Pennsylvania region. He's even tour managed for big bands like Breaking Benjamin, Star Set, Body Count, and Snoop Dogg's Crew. We talk about his successful wedding and event business, MCR Productions, and his involvement with the 2021 Blue Ridge Rock Festival happening in Virginia in September. We, of course, also discuss his new endeavor in the beverages game, along with Aaron Bruck of Breaking Benjamin, Josh Balls, formerly of Motionless and White, and current owner of businesses like The Strange and Unusual, Steamy Hollows, Batty Fang, and Noir Dark Spirits, and entrepreneur Chris Jones. They just launched Parlor Beverages, where they'll be introducing root beer, birch beer, and butterscotch to the masses come June. Welcome to the show, John Phillips. And we're live. Welcome. Well, it's funny because I say we're live, but like this is actually recorded.
Right. So I mean, it's being recorded live.
It's live now.
But is it? You know, when is then now?
When will then be now?
Soon.
Listen.
Paulie would love that right out of the gate.
Yeah, he'll get it.
Oh, I know he will.
I'll have to have him on the show. I just had a man of the year on, and I believe Paulie was also a man of the year.
I believe you are correct.
Yeah.
Was that after or before?
Before or after what?
Or before or after the, you know, I was that. Like, when was he a man of the year?
Was it hour after? Oh, you see what I did there? Did you see what I did there?
I knew it was coming. I was really just trying to avoid it, though. You know, that's
were you man of the year too?
Yes.
Or man of the week?
No, man of the year.
You were?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was me.
They'll give that to anybody, huh?
No, it was me. Seriously, honestly, it was equal opportunity here that year. It was Emmer Nebaski also.
That's right. Was that 2005 or 2006?
I want to say it was six, but I could be wrong. That was when the Weekender cover was made and Steve made it. And it was like the one of like us bursting through.
Yes.
Newspaper. And my hair was like,
okay, then it must've been 2006. Like, if Steve did that, because Steve started.
Whole, like, Edward Persian hands,
you know,
style going on.
Yes, of course. Who could forget? So I could do like a double whammy here.
Yeah.
I have John Phillips here with me right now. And I just made a post on Instagram and Facebook that I was, the main goal of this conversation is to try to find out when you sleep.
it does happen.
I don't know how.
I mean, I'm not upside down, you know, like, not like, I don't like sleep like a bat or anything, but I mean, I get a couple of hours, you know, between the work and,
well, one of your partners sleeps upside down, Josh Balls.
He does sleep upside down, but that, like, it works for him though. You know, that doesn't, it doesn't work for me whatsoever.
He's young.
Like you would see him sleeping upside down and you'd be like, what's up, Josh? And if you saw me doing that, you'd be like, what the hell are you doing? Like, that would be the difference.
Right.
And it would be expected of him, mommy.
Well, for those of you who don't know you, and I'd be surprised at who doesn't. You're a man of many talents. I want to call you a musician turned entrepreneur.
I guess that's fair to say,
right?
Yeah.
Because I mean, I don't know your life before UUU, because I met you when you were in the band UUU and performing solo and things like that. But you went from UUU and you had Hour After, and there's probably some other things that I'm missing. You played, you know, across probably the eastern part of the country, maybe outside of that probably too. But yeah, so I mean, you're in tons of bands. And then now you kind of gave up the guitar and gave up all that for, you know, ventures in business.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is though, is that, it kind of just morphed, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, so before I was involved with music, like I was actually always involved with music since I was 10. And it's funny because the person who actually got me into music was a very indirect thing. It was two different ways. The first was my mom. And my mom got me into music because it's not that she forced it on me. It's, when I was a kid and, you know, I used to go to bed, they put me to bed at like, you know, 8 o'clock, you get the routine when you're a kid, you know what that's like. You have a kid and you're just like, get in the routine, get in the bed. I want to do my thing and relax.
Exactly.
So I would open my door and I would listen to her play the piano for like an hour and a half. Cause that's all she did. She played the piano and she would play all these different things by like Elton John and Lynyrd Skynyrd and, you know, the Doors. And, you know, she got me into like tons of music indirectly though, cause she was an avid music lover. And then when I was, I'd say that was about like when I was 8, 9 years old, when I was 10, I started playing violin. My grandfather got me into that when I was in like grade school. I went to Whittier. It was like a school in Scranton and like Southside. So I started with that and then I moved on to cello when I went to South Scranton, and then I went to high school and then they didn't have any like string department. So I played in the band, for like, I don't know, a year, and I hated it. I played timpani. I was like, this is not for me at all. So I stopped. And then I went on to play in a high school band with guys like Matt Hiller, John Carpinetti, who John plays in a Journey tribute band, and Carl Schmidt, who's a bass player at the time. And I forget the name of our band. I think it was called Pulse or something like that. It was just like some high school band where like you'd go practice in a barn and doing stuff. And I threw like a rager for my 16th birthday and had like 100 kids like running around with flame torches in my backyard. Like that's a true story. And it was bad. And then
where were your parents?
They were there terrified. you know, they were trying to figure out whether to call the cops or just, you know, not go to jail and not call the cops. So, yeah. You know, then I went into chorus in high school and I joined Madrigal, and one of my main mentors for music was actually my Madrigal teacher. Her name was Jody Reinheimer, and she kind of whipped me in shape, I guess was the best way to put it. And she really wanted to bring the best out in me. So like the first year that I was there in junior year, I didn't really try all that much. So I was like, whatever. But then I really started getting into it more and more. And then my parents also sent me off to music camp for the summer of my senior year. So I went to band camp, I guess is the best way to put it. But I met another mentor there who was Marco Marcinko. And Marco was, you know, a teacher for that camp. And I met a lot of great musicians that were there, including Eli Holudzik, you know, who went to high school with me at that time, who wound up playing in a band with me as a drummer. And we're still great friends. We were actually just talking the other day. And I went back for my senior year and decided I really wanted to try and give it my all. And, you know, I like to sing at that point. Who would think that a guy that sounds like a Persian Gilbert Godfrey could actually sing? It's kind of the best way to put it.
Can you do it? Can you do that?
No.
Come on.
No, maybe later. Right. But I just decided to work at it. And I went to all states that year and like slayed it. And I did not expect it. You know, I wasn't ranked really well in like all the schools, and it motivated me. And I always loved music. It was a big thing, whether I wanted to, you know, play in a band or do whatever. So went to states, you know, got out of college, got out of high school, and I had all these offers to go, you know, be a music teacher or go learn music. So my goal was actually to be a choir teacher. And I wanted to go to Duquesne University out in Pittsburgh. And then I got a call. I was playing from my friend, Mike Dudley, and I decided to play. He asked me to be a singer in a cover band with him called Big Bear Mikey. So I went and did that. And, you know, we were playing out like all the time, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I decided to wait on Duquesne. I was going to school locally at Lackawanna and learning business and marketing. And then I got a call saying that a band needed a keyboard player and that was going to pay very good money. And it was going to be 6 days a week between Binghamton and Ocean City, Maryland, and all over the eastern part of Pennsylvania and New Jersey and everywhere else. And I was like, well, who's the band? They're like, you. And I was 19 years old at the time. So you offered a 19-year-old kid a lot of money to play in bars with a bunch of 30-year-olds in college towns. Sounds terrible. So I gave up everything and decided I'm going to go play in a band and we're going to see what happens. And then it all went downhill from there for a while.
But I was going to say, so, I mean, obviously you are where you are today, and we'll get into that. But do you ever regret taking the route you did rather than going to Duquesne?
No, not once. You know, I'm actually a big believer in the fact that, you know, everything kind of unfolds the way it's supposed to unfold. Like a lot of people believe the fact that, you know, choice is kind of the ultimate thing that leads you down the path of where you go to. I have a much different philosophy. I have a philosophy that you're just meant to go where you're supposed to go. And I don't believe in coincidence. I don't believe in chance. I believe that everything happens for a reason, and everything, you know, people cross paths the way that they're supposed to, because they're supposed to be intertwined with each other. You know, maybe that goes back more into philosophical or religious, but one thing that I would say is that I have no regrets about anything that I've done in my life, because it's brought me to every great thing that I've had and every tragic thing that right. I've had. And I think that that's ultimately what defines me, and it defines all of the great people that are around me every day. And it's the fact that all of those areas that I've gone into is, you know, who knows where I would be right now. You know, if I went to Duquesne, would I just be some choir teacher that's just waving his wand like a Slytherin up in the air, you know, teaching choir, which would be totally cool. And I still love choir music, but maybe I wouldn't have gotten to do all the exciting things that I've been a part of. And I'm very grateful for all of my mistakes, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I think I kind of hold the same philosophy. I always try and think of the fact that everything happens for a reason. But I wonder if I would think that, like, if my life was shit, right? Because, right, I mean, if my life was shit, I'd probably be like, oh, wow, like, I mean, I wish I would have done that differently. I wish I would have done this differently. Like, I mean, I'm pretty blessed, and I'm pretty happy with where my life is. And, you know, it's funny because you look back and say, oh, I wonder if I went to a different college, like how would my life have changed? But like, I went to King's College, and that was a reason because, you know, I met my friends and I got the job at the Weekender, and I, you know, moved on from there. It's just kind of funny, but like it was all good things that happened, right?
Yeah. I mean,
what's like for you?
I mean, listen, like there's certain people I'm very grateful for that, you know, you know, when we talk about that, you know, versus me going to Duquesne, you know, I truly believe that, you know, party disco band that I was in really is the entity. And, you know, those guys are really what molded me into what I am. And I'm grateful for that. You know, Joe, who is a drummer, taught me more about business than any other person or any college or any teacher could have ever taught me. And he was ruthless and he was brutal with things. And, you know, the one thing I think I learned from Joe was self-worth more than anything. And, you know, what Aaron Brooke was in the band for quite a while, and he didn't come in until maybe 3 years after I was in the band, 2-3 years around there. And my relationship with Aaron was developed from that band. He and I have had quite a journey as far as friendships go. And he's somebody I respect and I look up to, you know, like big brother mentality also. You know, he's bettered me, and I would hope that in some ways I've done the same for him too. I think he's the one person in this area that, from him being a musician, you could always say if anybody truly deserved it, you know, he was the cat that really like everybody was always rooting for around here. And it's that dream come true mentality of being where he belongs, exactly now too.
Right. And for those just watching, listening, Aaron Brooke, if you don't know, is currently the bass player for just a little band by the name of Breaking Benjamin. A little bit. Little band. Oh, nice. Nice. Shout out, Breaking Ben.
Yeah, I love this. I love this zip up. I still wear it. But it's funny, like, you know, you look at this area, there's a lot of cynicism that still exists in this area sometimes because it's very tight knit and it's a distressed area. But the funniest things is that like for when it comes to the Northeast PA, you know, I always thought that like the more adversity you have with something, the greater the creation that essentially comes out of it. And, you know, you take guys like Josh Balls, you take guys like Aaron and, you know, even Chris from Motionless, you know, Dustin Drebich, you know, some of the other great acts that have like come out of this market, like even Tiger's Jaw and the Menzingers. And, you know, NEPA is kind of an interesting area because I always thought it was like a little mini LA, kind of just situated like up on the Eastern Seaboard, that great talent comes out of. Like Pennsylvania is a really cool state. Like, don't get me wrong, it's, you know, it's 6 months of sticks and 6 months of leaves, but like, There's some great bands and music that comes out of this market. You know, Fuel, Live, Breaking Benjamin, Hailstorm, you know, now Another Day Dawns, you know, which I've been managing. You have Motionless, From Ashes to New, August Burns Red. You know, and it's humbling to see that a state just has such high impact. At least in the rock market, like it has it in other markets too, in other, you know, forms of creation essentially. But for music, it's just its own animal out here. It's a great thing to see.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to kind of go in the, you know, the timeline of, you know, where you are today, where you started, but you're kind of jumping into the whole music aspect outside of you performing. So let's just get into that too. You know, you were the tour manager for Breaking Benjamin. You now kind of manage some bands locally. You mentioned Another Day Dawns. I believe you have on your roster Eternal Frequency. Mm-hmm. There's another one you just picked up that's really great. I forget the name of it.
Phantoms.
Awesome band. That's led our Eternal Frequency and Phantoms, both fronted by females, which is pretty cool. I'm not a huge fan of I shouldn't say this because it's going to come out the wrong way. But typically it takes a lot for me to enjoy a female fronted band. And it's not because of, you know, it's a female. It's just like, it takes a lot, but both those bands, are really great. I'm not just saying that because I'm looking at you. It's my honest opinion, but,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know? But I'm always honored because you always like send stuff my way. Like, hey, what do you think about this? And this is before you even like come out and say you sign them.
So I'm going to have to let this cat out of the bag, you know? And I think this, and I don't want to put you on a pedestal because that'll just make your ego go crazy.
I'm not an egomaniac.
You know, what's funny, John, is that anytime that I first hear a band that I get excited by, and I'm like, you know, I need another opinion on this. You're actually the first person I send it off to before I send it to anybody else.
Wow.
And that's a true story. Like, I'm not just saying this for a podcast or to make you look good or, you know, for PR aspects or whatever, but like, I actually genuinely value your opinion on the insight of music. It's only because of the fact of how far back you've gone with it and the way that we've had a relationship over the last couple of years, you know, because I always figure, you know, if there's something there, I think Johnny Popko will actually let me know. And I do mean that with a bunch of sincerity as well.
Well, I think you know how to pick them yourself too, because I don't think there's ever been a band that you've brought to me where I'm like, you know, I'll never forget you. I had pink eye actually at the time. And you said, what are you doing today? And I said, well, I'm at home. I have pink eye. And you're like, you got to come to my warehouse. I'm like, well, can you just like tell me on the phone? No, I got to see you face to face. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy? What's going on here? You know? So I'm like, it must be important. So I think the next day or whatever, I, you know, was no longer contagious with pink eye. I came and saw you. And it was to play me, I believe it was a song by Another Day Dawns. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's how like secretive you are too. You're like, oh, I can't email it. I can't send it over the phone. I can't even talk about it over the phone. Someone's probably listening to me. You got to hear it in person. So.
Yeah. And you know, I genuinely, you know, get excited about music still to this day. You know, we'll obviously lead into that for the other aspects that I'm involved with, but you know, artist development is the hardest thing that there is, period. And I rely on a lot of counsel for that from people, even as a manager, you know, because there's a lot of mentors and people that I respect within the industry of people that have done great things. You know, and it's, you know, tour management taught me a lot about that. And it's funny, I would say that, you know, developing a music conference at one point taught me a lot about that too, you know, before Cabby and Ken had, their festival, you know, obviously we did ours for about 6 years and everything. And I got to work with Caviston before that also. And Kenny, like, and it was cool event to have for the city to watch artists develop and bloom and get exposure out to numerous people that they haven't to before. But I got a lot of different perspective outside of Northeast PA being with all the artists and the great crew guys that I have been, you know, between Breaking Ben and Starset and Body Count and Snoop Dogg and Public Enemy. And, you know, they all taught me a lot, you know, and it was funny because it's the one thing that you don't really get too much of in that regard, you know, between a blend of hip hop and rock and everything, it was an exposure to culture. And I think that was a big thing with music in general is the exposure to culture, because music, all it just is a language. And it's a matter of, you know, you go to a buffet and it's like, what do I want to sample here? I mean, you may not go to a buffet again after COVID, but like my point being is that like, you know, when you could go to a buffet, you'd go, what is it that I want to sample? And I think sometimes with people is that, you know, when they don't understand music or they don't get into it or they make fun of it, it's not because they don't appreciate it. It's because they don't understand the language of it. They don't understand the culture of it. And certain people really had to teach that to me, be it, you know, Chuck D of Public Enemy, honestly, Chad Fuller, who was my production manager from Snoop as well, taught me about that. you know, Ben from Breaking Benjamin, Aaron, like all of them have a certain language when it comes to their music. And I think that's a really big thing that people need to understand when it comes to music in general, even with pop. And everybody says, oh, pop is bubblegum or it's this or that. And it's like, well, yeah, it's getting a million streams. And there's a reason why, because it's an accessible language that everybody can understand. You know, maybe hip hop isn't something that everybody can understand, or metal isn't something that everybody can understand. And, you know, you have a certain factor of people that they understand the language of it and they love it. But if you learn to appreciate it and you learn to understand it, I think it makes a huge difference. Like, I was never into hardcore and metal at one point. I'd be like, what is this? Like, when I was like, I can't get into this. And then when I got more exposed to it, I sat back, I'm like, this is great stuff. And because, you know, it's an emotional attraction. It's somebody's art, you know, and sometimes it's, you just got to break down your own barriers to really get to know somebody else's language. And that, I think once you have an appreciation for everything, is when your culture and your eyes really expand into all of those markets. And I think that's honestly what really makes anybody successful in the music business, is the appreciation of culture and of language.
I think it's fair to say that that would probably be a good thing to kind of adopt to just life in general, right? You know, especially the world we live in now, you know, just be open to different whatever. I mean, whether it's food, whether it's, you know, different cultures and things like that.
I would agree, you know, and I think that, you know, not that we're trying to get off topic here or anything, but I mean, it's a good conversation to have, is that, like, you know, there's enough polarizing aspects as there is these days, be it, you know, you're conservative, or be it you're, you know, liberal, or being that you, you don't understand, you know, this area of, you know, when people say, you know, BLM, or these people say MAGAs, or this, that, and it's like, look, like, everybody knows me, knows that I'm a very outspoken individual, and I could give two shits what anybody thinks or says when it comes down to it. I think really what it just boils down to in the end is to just be a good person. You know, and sometimes being a good person means also being an upfront and overly honest person with things. And, you know, everybody has their own ideals, and they have their own opinions on what they think is best for them. And I think that ultimately should be respected. But what I don't think is the right course of action is the fact that, you know, is trying to be divisive and not trying to find like a middle ground or a point, which was funny. This will lead into another conversation, which is root beer. So, you know, cause I know this conversation is going to come up, but I'll kind of get ahead of the curve. And, you know, obviously everybody that does know me knows that myself and Aaron and Josh and Chris, have all come together to start a root beer company. And the funny story is during the pandemic, I started sampling root beers from all across the country, because what else was there to do? Honestly, right. You know, we're sitting in our house, kids are screaming. You don't know if you can go out, if you're going to die if you go outside. You know, you don't know if it's like, do I die or do I get spaghetti at the store? I don't know what to do with my life at this point. I'm just like, I'm going to hit up Amazon. Let's, you know, let's get some boilants. Let's go. So I spent like $400 or $500 on root beer and started sampling out all over the place. And, you know, I decided that I wanted to do, once I figured it out, it's like, I loved root beer and I just wanted to do my own brand. And I thought, I can't do this by myself, because if I do this by myself, you know, it's just one more thing on my list. And like, yeah, I could call up a lot of my resources and people I do business with, and it would probably do well locally, but what good is that? You know, I wanted to do something with my friends and people I respected and people that I thought could make a difference and an impact on things. And, you know, when the funny story is, when I first went to Josh and Aaron and asked them, I'm like, can we do this together, you know, and get involved with this? Originally I wanted to call it Rock and Roll Root Beer. And Josh was like, that's stupid. So, you know, and funny enough, he's the one, if I remember this correctly, that actually came up with the name. I think we were all just kind of like going back and forth. We were thinking of calling it Shop. And then like, I think we all just came out with the name Parlor. And Parlor was kind of a synonymous name at that point for you know, obviously ultra conservatism, and, you know, was looked at like a hate stature in a way.
I was going to ask you about that, because I knew what the name of the company was prior to the release of it.
You did.
And I feel like you did a lot of market research via Facebook and social media. And you said, what should we call it? And I'm a joker. I'm a dickhead, right? And I said, maybe you should name it after like this, Trump app. That'd be cool. And you immediately texted me like, hey, dickhead, not cool. But it's an honest question, though. You guys launched this product in a time where Parler, the word, mm-hmm. was synonymous, like you said, with a very polarizing figure, that being Donald Trump.
You know, I'm going to say this about Trump, too, is that Trump will go down in history as a great president. And that's a lot for me to say, and people are going to go, what? And I'm going to say, listen, great people do great things. Great people do terrible things also. It's kind of like the Harry Potter thing when they say that, but still great, you know? And I'm not saying that like the whole thing was like a Voldemort thing, but listen, is that whether or not anybody wants to agree with it, you know, and even me leaning in my views that I do, the world has changed. And it changed, whether it's for the better or the worse, is completely, by perspective. And that's what it really comes down to. It's really by perspective. And everything in this world is by perspective. So when we were looking at Parler as the name for the root beer, I was adamant about the fact of when talking with people about it. And I just said, listen, root beer is a product that invokes a memory with people. And, you know, you don't get that from a Coke or a Pepsi or a Sprite or whatever. Like maybe you do, but, you know, I've never really been, I don't have that kind of attachment to it. You know, what I do have an attachment to is sitting down with my grandmother when I was 4 years old, or my grandfather on the back porch and like, you know, him teaching me about poker or checkers or like how to hustle blackjack when I was 5 years old, or teaching me like World War II or stuff like that. Like that soft drink for some reason hits a memory with me, and it takes me back to a place where I want to be. And I think that was the biggest thing that I wanted to do, and the rest of us wanted to do with this product, is that we wanted a product that would take you to a place where everyone wants to be. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a conservative, it doesn't matter if you're a liberal, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you want to marry a giraffe, like I don't care what you want to do with it at the end of the day. Like it's a product for everybody. And that was the biggest thing is that we wanted to do with Parler, is that we wanted to associate it. It's like, well, Parler is everyone. It's everyone on this side and that side. And, you know, so not to sound like some crazy kook, but like somehow like root beer kind of like meets in the middle with all of it, you know, because everybody can enjoy it. And it's something that like everybody's troubles or problems, you know, we're all forgotten about, you know. And the one of the reasons why we even wanted to do a little sidebar story that leads into this is that when the reason this was developed with the edge and the branding that the way that it was actually a story because of Breaking Benjamin, funny enough. I was on a tour with them for about a year and a half. You know, we were just going from bus to bus to bus, and got to Knoxville. And, you know, I didn't have a haircut in 4 months and looked like Al-Qaeda. So I was like, I need to go out and get a haircut. And I found this barbershop down there and walked in, and they're like, just go sit in the back. You'll be ready here in a little bit. You know, somebody will be out to get you. I'm like, what do you mean somebody will be out to get me? So I go in the back. They've got pool tables. They've got jerky. They've got like all this crap. I'm like, it's a man cave. I'm like, this is great. And this girl comes out and she's like, come sit in the chair that's in the barbershop. I'm like, okay. She puts this bib around me, and she takes out like this old like 1950s like shoulder massager that like, you know, you hit a switch and like there's this pattern going like this on. She starts smashing my shoulders like there's no tomorrow. I'm like, where did I step into? She gets done, and then she reaches into the fridge and grabs me a frosted mug and pours me a root beer. I'm like, I'm done. This is it. This is the most amazing thing ever. And, you know, this big, huge, like barber guy, like arms out to here, comes out, and the dude's just stacked. And he just gives me the best haircut of my life. in the South, for any haircut guys that are up here that cut my hair, you're just as good. But like, anyways, like the fact is that that memory didn't leave my mind. And it was funny because I told this to Jason Macheska, who's my former bass player and, you know, great, you know, another entrepreneur who's obviously got his new venue, the Keystone Stage up there with my best friend, Aaron Zona and Tyler. You know, the thing about it is that, you know, he said to me, he's like, you know, it sounds like this root beer is your way of trying to recreate that memory. And I kind of like got really quiet about it. And I'm like, you're right. I'm like, this is something that I do want to recreate. And I wanted it as a product, even had a name that was synonymous for controversy. The only way you get over controversy is to face it head on and get it out of the way. Don't leave room to breathe with anything. It's the 8 mile mentality when he goes in and he does the rap battle and he's like, talk shit, you know, here it all is. You got nothing else to say. That was the approach that we wanted to go with this. And not every root beer brand has the F bomb sitting on its website or whatever. Yeah. But
I want to get to that because it's a question I had, like, so, and I want to ask a question because I'm genuinely curious.
Mm-hmm.
You're a smart guy. Chris Jones is a smart guy. Josh Ball is a smart guy. Aaron Brooks, smart guy. So I'm going to ask this question because I genuinely know. So you talk about you wanted to create a brand that's kind of invited people to come together. It was for everyone. But the branding you used is of kind of a half-naked woman with tattoos. Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously NEPA, Northeastern Pennsylvania, for those who don't know what the NEPA stands for. But could kind of be the opposite of, you know, bringing together. And then I've also seen, you know, mention of the fact that you want it to be, you know, target children, their families. And then you just mentioned you have, you know, the F word in the branding. I feel like there's probably a story behind that, but I had to ask.
Sure. So Patty Parler, who's the girl that we've named essentially on there, she was the pinup girl that we wanted to use for the forefront of this because we wanted it to be an eye catcher. And I already could see that coming a mile away. And, you know, we had a discussion with this among the founders and we said, you know, how are we going to come across with not being sexist? So with all of the flavoring that we're going to do, be it a birch and be it, you know, a butterscotch, I said, I'm like, we need to have, you know, a guy. So, you know, one of the next branding that we'll have for this, you know, for the butterscotch, will feature a guy that's on it, you know, and going back to like, you know, jeans and tattoos and like old, like, you know, tank tops and that nature. And, you know, one of the other things that I wanted to get across to people too is like, listen, we not only can not have a guy, but we also need to have people that have a variety of skin tones also, because that's the inclusion aspect. And look, the thing is that society can get, you know, and I'm more liberal when it swings with things and I'm more conservative when it swings with things, is that, you know, it's not a fact of it being sexist, you know, having a pinup girl on there, you know, because my argument for that is, well, if that's viewed as sexist, you know, then what are people doing in a bikini out at the beach every day? Would you like to put them in a box, you know, or, you know, are we going to stop selling Speedos and we're going to stop selling that kind of stuff? Sexist would be if we took a pinup girl and put her in a provocative position, you know, next to a dude on there. That's sexist. You know, if anything, we wanted to make it empowering. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that who you are is who you are. You know, and that goes for anybody that's your businessman who just wears your suit. Make sure you wear your best Argyle socks going out the door that day. I wear Argyle socks. Don't take offense to it. If you're the guy that's going to be, you know, wearing your leather jacket, if you're the girl who's the day-to-day mom who doesn't necessarily go out in the workforce, but her job as a mom is twice as hard as anybody out in the workforce because you're taking care of your kids. That's the inclusion part of that. And that everybody's beautiful in the sense of, you know, be it you're covered in tattoos or you have less clothing on your body, you know, it's not the fact of being sexualized. It's the fact of being empowered. And, you know, Parler is a branding that has empowerment behind it. You know, when we say about the F-bomb being on the website, it's funny because people take the F-word in such a connotation of it being offensive. language itself is not offensive. The context of language is what is offensive. What can be offensive to one person is not offensive to another. You know, the F word is offensive if you make it offensive towards somebody. If you say, you know, he's an effing asshole, that's offensive. You know, but like, if you ever watch the movie Eurotrip?
Yes.
Okay.
It's been a while, but yeah.
You remember like the soccer hooligans that are on that bus and they're like, those fucking Itoids, man. Like, you know, they're just there to party, you know, and they're like, yo, you want to, like, you could say like, do you want a root beer, dude? Like, F yeah, I do. Like, because it's, that's the meaning behind the context, you know, and the thing about it is that, and this is a lesson that I think that needs to be instilled in kids as much as it needs to be instilled in adults. It's the fact that language is a barrier between people and they need to stop being so offensive about what they hear and what they need to start perceiving when they listen to it and understand it. And parlor really is that aspect. It's a fact of understanding. And when using the F-bomb, you know, in all due fairness, we blocked out the U and put a star there. So it's all interpretive.
So it's not, yeah, it's not real.
It's not real. It does, it can be facking.
Never happened.
It's fine. It's the fact though that of being celebratory and actually enjoying yourself and stop being so uptight about everything.
Sure.
And I think that's ultimately, you know, when you go back to a political conversation that we just had with things, be it conservative or being liberal, is I think one of the biggest problems that there is that there's a barrier between being so uptight and then just enjoying and being more like the fact of enjoying life a little bit more and not focusing on so many narratives in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's not a dog whistle more or less for the fact of, you know, justification of ignorance, because there is no justification for that. But there is a justification for the fact, though, of to relax in an environment that is so wound up right now that we need to find a commonality between all of us for where we can enjoy ourselves. And that is what our branding is all about, completely.
So drink more effing root beer.
Exactly.
And don't worry about the bullshit.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's the whole point. You know, that's why I keep saying that is, you know, is the fact, you know, you say drink more effing root beer. It's the fact of, it's like you just said, it's about being, you know, it's a lifestyle. It's about edge. It's about enjoying yourself and to stop worrying sometimes about things that just don't have to be worried about.
So kind of like, oh, have a fucking root beer and chill out.
If we want to go down that road.
Yeah, why don't you go cry about it? Like, you know, like,
you know, like, drink, yeah, but again, that's context and connotation. Be like, yo, man, blah, 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 you know, kind of getting in your face. Be like, dude, just drink more effing root beer, you know, like that's, and that's interpretation, okay. You know. And honestly, I think that's the best thing that everybody needs right now is, you know, to drink more effing root beer.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited to try it. I mean, root beer doesn't get me as, you know, excited as you, but I would never turn down a good root beer. When can people expect to get root beer in their hands from Paul?
So we actually have our first batch being made this week. We're doing our first test run just privately. So we have a couple of kegs of it being made and up in our up on the fourth floor, we'll have it on tap in the office just so we can, you know, pour it out for everybody. And, you know, we're kind of just doing like an internal sampling, if you will. And we plan to have full product launch by around the end of June. It looks okay. Like, so we've already been doing all of our ordering with our ingredients. Matt Giordano has been killing it, you know, helping us out as well. Like we've been working on all the packaging, you know, the bottle caps, the labeling, like it's a massive process really to develop a brand. Like, a lot of people sit there and say, you know, I want to have my own root beer brand. And then you get into it and you're like, holy shit, like there's a lot of stuff that's associated with this, you know, and licensing and yeah. You know, NDAs and all this. And I can't wait to honestly do it. I will not lie. We did absolutely buy an inflatable 20-foot bottle of root beer It's 5 feet wide, and I literally need like a 14-foot footprint just to like weigh it down and, you know, strap it so it doesn't fly off. Although I would love to see CNN that day if there was a 20-foot root beer bottle just flying in the wind across the Susquehanna.
Like a spaceship.
Exactly. With the freaking Dogecoin dog riding on the back of it.
Yeah, you're a big crypto guy now, huh?
I'm not a big crypto guy, but I'm into it. You know, I started doing a lot of stocks and getting into investments. You know, I have a lot of diversity in money for what I do. I like to safeguard it. You know, I really started learning more from a lot of cats that I respect. I don't know if you know Steve Zampano by any chance.
I do. I actually just I commented on his post earlier. He was making some steaks, and one looked like a set of lungs.
He, you know, it was funny. Like, we became pandemic social media buddies. Okay. You know, we just like started talking every day here and there, like with investments and things online. And then we just go back and forth about stuff. And, you know, I send him info, he sends me info, you know, we talk about the area, the scene, we talk music. And it was funny. It's like, I have like my own like digital pen pal right now, which is like, I mean, I'm not in jail, but it's like, it's was cute. So fun. But it's so cool, like, to really get to know him. And this other guy, Adam Cook, Adam does media for Disturbed. And he's a really huge crypto guy, and he knows so much about it that it's almost scary. And I really respect the dude, and for all the info that he's been giving me back and forth, it's like, you know, I wasn't really a believer in it, and now I'm a believer in it. I think it's revolutionary, and I do think that everybody's got to simmer down with buying the dog on the coin, because that leads to nowhere good ever when you ride the wave. You know, and if you're going to invest in companies, invest in them and don't really sell them off. Just, if you've got the money, do your research, put it into the business, and then just let it sit there for 5 to 10 years. And then you can go back and look at it and be like, holy crap. You know, and I'm a big investor in Disney. I 100% believe in that. I am not a financial advisor as well. I'm giving the disclaimer now, you know, like everybody else.
All five of my listeners do not listen to him for financial advice.
Yes, you can. It is strictly an opinion of mine.
You know, one thing I'm mad at myself about, and you, I'll give you credit for this. I think back in March of last year, when the pandemic hit and everyone was turned into, you know, some sort of online meeting, you know, hosting service, one of them being Zoom. And I believe you said to invest in Zoom, and it was super low, and I was going to, and I didn't. And I didn't because, you know, the powers that be told us it was going to be 2 weeks. It was also this big, like, you know, Zoom didn't have this, like, you know, people were Zoom bombing people and things like that. I'm like, this isn't going to, like, work out. And I'm kicking myself in the ass today.
You know, Zoom is down from where it was. You know, it was at like 600 a share. It's like 320 now. But, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, it had a quick wave. It came back down. In my opinion, it's going to go back up regardless. You know, whether or not people want to believe this, like, you know, John, the world's changed and everybody else has to also. And, you know, just because there's a vaccine here doesn't mean that things necessarily go back to the way that they were. You know, I can honestly tell you that, you know, it will take a long, long time for many of us to kind of want to be around each other in some regards of like some certain kind of gatherings. But, you know, the world evolves and the world changes, you know, and just like we said about Trump, you know, just like we say about music, just like we say about root beer, you know, it all moves forward in different ways. And I think that's the beautiful thing, is that if you're not afraid of change and you actually welcome it, you can really benefit from it a lot if you kind of meet it head on.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things almost like it's hard to change, I guess. So that's kind of sounds weird to say.
But, yeah. That might be my new favorite quote from you. Yeah. It is hard to change.
You can't. It's hard to change it.
Can't change.
You can't change. I mean, like, and what I mean by that is, like, people want to, you know, be so stubborn against it and fight it. And, you know, it was funny. There was a, an old boss of mine, he, and this, I don't know if this kind of relates or not, but there's a story about a buffalo. And I guess what buffalo do, right? This is a great, this is like one of the greatest stories I've ever heard.
Okay.
What buffalo do, I'm going to fuck this up, but it's a great story. They, instead of running away from a storm, they run into it. Okay, because, and when my boss was saying this to me, I was like, wow, that is really, because like, you know what, you can run from the storm, right? You're gonna run, you're gonna get tired. Eventually the storm's gonna catch up to you, right? So you're still gonna have to go through it regardless. But you spend all this time running away from it, and it's gonna catch you eventually. So instead of doing that, just right head first into the storm, deal with it, get through it, and be on your way.
Wow. Wow. That's a great buffalo story.
I thought it was.
I'm not going to forget that.
I thought it was a great story.
No, it is a great
story. You know, and it was, he told it in the time of the pandemic. He's like, listen, guys, like, we can either continue running from this, or we could, you know, face it head on and get through it and come out on the other side, you know, quicker than you would running from it.
I like it.
I did too. I thought it was great.
I'm going to use that story sometime.
There you go.
When, I don't know, but I'll give you credit when I do.
All right, yeah. That asshole Popko told me a story one time about a buffalo. Here it is.
Like, watch this podcast for this story right here. Get the clicks. Oh, all the clicks.
Yeah. Hard to change.
Yep.
And buffalo.
That's that that really is my new favorite quote. It's hard to change.
Ah, shit.
Amazing.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that too, because not only are, you know, you're pushing the root beer, everyone drink more effing root beer. You know, you manage these bands, but also you are involved with a music festival that is coming up. I want to say August, I might be wrong, but it's the Blue Ridge Rock Festival.
Yes.
And I don't know this story about how you're involved with this. I see you guys releasing, you know, new bands to the show, which, I mean, I think it's incredible. I mean, Limp Bizkit, you just announced the other day. I'm a big fan.
Well, it's a funny story. So the CEO and I, we originally met in Washington, D.C., when I was out on tour with Snoop. You know, when I was out with them, I kind of like helped to, I was the assistant tour manager to Tasha. Tasha was like the head of the entire organization. And she was like, you know, she's one of my good friends too. And, you know, they actually just did a big thing the other night in Atlanta also. But I met him down there and, you know, we just got to talking. And, you know, he was interested in like some of the bands that like that I was involved with, like Body Count and Another Day Dawns, you know, and also with Snoop and things of that nature. So, you know, I kind of helped to like put him on the path of, you know, getting to him some of these acts essentially. And John and I formed a good friendship too. And I respect him a lot. And he's young. He's like in his late 20s. And just a go-getter, you know, a high ambition entrepreneur just out of nowhere that I didn't even know was on the radar doing anything. And then I was on vacation and we were originally talking and, you know, I met him in Charlottesville when I saw my family and he was interested in hiring new people. And I was like, I'd love to get involved. You know, what can I do? And, he knew, that I had a lot of good relationships in the industry. So, after a couple interviews, he wound up hiring me as the director for business development for the festival. So my job with them is to hunt out new, not ancillaries essentially, but just new relationships and garnering business essentially for Blue Ridge and outreach. And, you know, basically going through like a lot of like higher up, like some economic relationships and developing those things with like local chambers and organizations and, you know, bringing more to the table for the organization. Blue Ridge itself is a massive festival this year. It's got 6 stages. It's got well over 100 bands. It's kind of taken on this life right now as being the festival of the East Coast, or, you know, not even just the East Coast, but of the US right now. That's just massive. It's like the little engine that could, and it keeps doing it. And we keep announcing all of these bands, and it's crazy what we're doing. The organization bought a 250-acre amphitheater in Danville, Virginia, which is right on the border of like Greensboro and Lynchburg, Virginia. And they also recently purchased a 1,700-cap venue in Lynchburg. So we're not only developing this amphitheater with this festival and other festivals that are coinciding, but also a 1,700-cap venue that's going to be doing concerts and galas and weddings and events, which, you know, goes back to another area of business that I'm involved with owning MCR, and just having that knowledge. But, you know, Blue Ridge is a festival that is out of the box. And as far as fan-driven base, not saying that any festival isn't fan-driven, or, you know, it's obviously all fan-driven, but there's like this interesting relationship and connection between the fans and the actual festival and the, and John. And, you know, it's funny because he and I have actually gone back and forth on some of the marketing aspects for it, of saying, you know, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure this is the right way to go? And he's proven me wrong, you know, a couple times now regarding it. You know, and him being, you know, the head and my boss over it and everything too, but like part of my job is to give counsel and, you know, ask these questions. But it brought me back to, I think the biggest reason why Blue Ridge is successful is because it's run by a young millennial.
Right. And hustlers. Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing about this. You know, it's the fact that like it's out of the box and it's not the same. And the take on what the relationship is between owner and fan essentially is much different. And I have to, I really respect that also. There are some, I'm not going to lie to you, there are some major bands that we have not dropped yet for this thing. And the one thing that I'm excited about with Blue Ridge, for the festival, like you could drop all the headliners, you know, and they're your main impact. But the one thing I think that people really love about Blue Ridge right now is the fact that the undercards that are being announced and the supports are just like, people are mind blown by this. And all of these bands like, you know, Gojira and Body Count and From Ashes to New and, you know, Another Day Dawns, you know, Fozzy, you know, the list goes on and on and on. You know, I think today we did Ice Nine Kills and yesterday we did Clutch, and it's nuts. And yeah. I think the demand is so high, but I think it's just the relationship between the consumer and the actual festival is that much higher as well. I think that's what really, really matters here.
Well, yeah, I wanted to bring it up not only because you're involved, but also because, you know, where everyone else is kind of, you know, should we do this? Should we do that? This seems to be going full steam ahead.
Well, Virginia is much different than, you know, Pennsylvania. Every state is different, essentially. Like they're all different for what it is that they're doing right now, you know, between the laws and everything else that they have. I mean, you know, that's just a given. There's nothing you can do about that either. It's all up to local government. But like the one thing about this is too, is that, you know, we pretty much have a free range due to the fact of how much space that we have. And everybody is going to take measures and we're going to make sure that it's, you know, done accordingly, like any other festival is going to do also, be it, you know, LTL or Incarceration or Aftershock or any of them or Rockfest. You know, we all have a job to do and we all are going to make sure that it's done properly, you know. And just like anything else, if somebody's being unsafe, that's the end of it, you know, for you at least that day. It's a respect factor also.
Sure.
But I mean, it's guns blazing. I mean, John, when you see some of these, you know, I mean, I love the fact that Steve-O is hosting the festival from Jackass, which is nuts. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of surprises that day. You know, hopefully maybe he'll ride a 20-foot tall root beer bottle. Who knows at that point? But the one thing about it is that like, it's so cool that, you know, again, it's one more thing that I'm grateful for, is another area of music, be it, you know, from tour manager to performer to now being entrenched in a festival. You know, I don't think I could be any more grateful, not only for the fact of the people that I'm involved with currently, but all the people that I've been involved with previously that have allowed me to get into these positions and that I'm affiliated with, or that are my colleagues or anything else. And I would tell anybody right now that if you're in the Pennsylvania market or, you know, anywhere in the Eastern Seaboard, and you want, and if you're dying to go to a concert, like, this rock festival really is going to be the premiere of the Eastern coast. And it's going to be a hell of a good time, and it's not going to be one to forget.
And what is the date on that again?
It goes from September 9th through the 12th. Okay. We are going to be announcing other festivals as well this year. We are announcing a country festival. We are announcing a Christian festival. We are announcing a bourbon and barbecue festival.
Ooh.
And we are also announcing a mud bog festival, which I was unaware that something like this existed until I got down into Virginia and started working with these cats.
There was a mud bog. I mean, it's probably not on the same level, but just locally, like, I think in, I don't want to say Knoxon, but somewhere like maybe Berwick.
I love Knoxon.
Yeah, they have rattlesnakes and mud bogs.
Yeah, mud bogs. That's what it is.
But, and you know, the last sector of, you know, what you're involved in, I feel like everything you're involved with has really been affected negatively over the last year. You know, you're a tour manager and you work with bands. Obviously, shows didn't exist over the last year, and the bands that you manage probably haven't been, you know, they haven't been playing in the capacity that they were. Maybe a show here and there, but you also have a wedding and event business called MCR Productions, which obviously, you know, weddings last year and even now are kind of, I mean, now moving forward, they're kind of getting better. But the last year, weddings and events have been almost next to nothing. So what has that been like for, you know, that part of your business?
It was brutal. You know, I don't really sugarcoat that for anybody. I think anybody that works in the wedding and event business, you know, and it's MCR just doesn't work in that sector too. I mean, it does commercial work. It does, you know, galas, corporates, nonprofits, the whole nine yards. I mean, anything that was in the entertainment and leisure sector was pretty much crushed. We had to pivot in a lot of different areas. And the one thing, I sat there and I was looking at it and I was like, you know, I can either just take it on the chin and ride it out, or I could hustle. And I decided to hustle. And the thing that I've always said to everybody is that it's not about getting paid. It's about relationships. Clients get you a check. Relationships get you wealth. So I started calling everybody. And I was like, I want to have a meeting. I want to have, you know, just talk. I want to go through this. How are we going to get through this together? And that's the whole thing. It's not about my business. It's about all the other businesses that are surrounding by you and that are affected by you. And you need to pivot and figure out what it was that was going to make a difference and keep branding of the business in public eye. So even when it came down to advertising with a lot of people that they were expecting me to yank my dollars, I doubled down and I said, look, I'm going to give you these next couple of years, and you're going to lock me in at these rates, but I'm going to give you guaranteed business. And I don't want it to be forgotten because I want to keep my brand awareness out there for what it is that I'm doing. I had to back off of certain sectors to get out of them. And I figured I had to diversify where I was going to put branding awareness during that time, because to me, you know, print was pointless. So I was like, the hell with this. Like, I'm not going to do print. I'm not going to do billboards. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go after digital, because everything we were doing was this. It was all in your phone. It was all on your computer. So I went heavy on internet and it killed. You know, we got a lot, we were getting a lot more things of people doing things privately in their yards. You know, we were doing things like boxing up, you know, decor and doing samplings for things for like home for the holidays, kind of, you know, decorations and things that mattered with family. You know, I partnered with other companies and started offering, you know, my product in wholesale to them so they can make money, we can make money. And then I forged relationships with venues for the next couple of years because we were there for them. And the the one thing I really wanted to do last year, which I'm a nut for, is I wanted to stay in the public eye with the press of doing things that were based in the community, which is why I'm an idiot and I spend thousands of dollars on doing up my house for Halloween every year. Because, you know, we took the precautions. I had my kitchen tongs hanging out, like giving kids, you know, candy, wearing a mask, gloves, the whole nine yards. But for as bad as it was with the pandemic, you know, I didn't have to do that and I could have just saved my money and did whatever. But the fact was, is that if I did something like that for the community and made them feel like they could still get out and do a part of something that was safe and get an experience out of it for as much bad ones as there was to have a good one, that meant more to me than anything. And honestly, I felt would give a residual back to the community as far as doing something. You know, like, and it's not like an ego thing where it's like, oh, that's the guy who's like trying to like do all the Halloween stuff. Like our whole neighborhood does it down here and it's the coolest thing. It's a family neighborhood. And everybody kind of gets into it and does their own thing and, you know, makes their house great and does it for all the kids. And, you know, for me, for my business, like it was a big part of it too, because I wanted to go over the top with all the stuff that my business has and remind the community that, yeah, even when your business is down and out, you know, we're going to find a way no matter what to still do something. You know, I didn't even really take a salary from my business for the most part last year. And I was doing everything I can to save what employees I could, you know. And I think that was the biggest thing that I was the most upset about, was that there was people that I could not hire back. You know, you build up, you know, X amount of jobs at this, and then you have to call them and tell them like, we're not able to hire you because there is no business. And honestly, if I had kept all of them, it would have crushed the business, you know, but the ones that have always been here, like I had to make sure that I went to bat for the core people that were there. And, you know, I sacrificed my own money to do that because I didn't want to have to start that business off from another plateau a year from now, because quite honestly, those employees, they are my business, not me. They are the ones that are the absolute business of this whole thing. And I think that's one thing that businesses need to understand still to this day, is that, listen, like the CEOs or the heads of the small businesses, like, don't get me wrong, there's some restaurants that are really having problems, you know, and that's a socioeconomic, you know, issue that's going on right now regardless. But, you know, when these people come back to work and, you know, even if they're making less money or they're at, you know, the lowest tier possible for what you're paying out, you know, sometimes the thing that you have to do is get in their shoes and get an understanding as far as what it's like, again, to be in that position day in and day out. It's the commonality of, you know, treat the janitor just like you treat the CEO. It's all the same, you know, drink more effing root beer, you know?
You did make a post, I think it was yesterday or today, kind of referencing what you just said there. I liked what you said. It's weird. I'm not a business owner, so I really can't really talk. I can't speak to it. I'm very fortunate that I have a job and I haven't had to, you know, go through the experience of, I mean, don't get me wrong. My income was drastically affected by all of this. I mean, I'm 30% down, you know, year over year. But it could be a lot worse. I'm not complaining by any means, but it's so crazy. And what you said was, you know, you have to spend money. You've always said this. You always said you have to spend money to make money, but you also said like you have to, and you said it. So, I mean, if you help me out here, but kind of like you got to pay these people because you will, it'll make you more money in the end.
It does. The thing about it is that, listen, there's times where I've been able to pay more and there's times that I have not been able to pay more. But when I can pay more, I do. And I live beneath my means. And I never saw the value of living above it. For what? So I can have a cleaning lady clean my house and pay her. And, you know, don't get me wrong, like that's jobs that you're talking about. But then you're talking like, I got to spend my money on, you know, extra lawn care, and I got to spend my money on this and waste, you know, not waste my time, but like, you know, taking care of a much bigger house that's just going to sit empty. I can't do that with my life. I want to invest in people, Now, don't get me wrong. I want to invest in my kid's future and I want to invest in my fiance, like, because she deserves all the credit in the world for taking care of our kids on a day in and day out basis.
Put up with you. I mean, that's close.
And put up with me, yeah. Honestly. Anybody that
can do that, the
metal. but I wouldn't know what to do without her because she's just that instrumental for my well-being. And yeah. Also for the fact of, you know, raising our kids and making them better also. And, you know, they deserve the best as well. But my circle on top of that around my family deserves just as much. And I think that's the biggest thing that it comes down to is that look at the housing market right now. It exploded. You can't find a house. And if you can, call Carmen Winters. He'll get you one. He got you one also, Paco.
He got me two.
He got you two. Right. And the thing about it is that, you know, that it was all an explosion because you could get all these big houses for lower rates and this and that. And, you know, the only thing I worry about with that sometimes is that, yeah, you get a bigger house, but like, do you get more of an overhead in a different area? Like, do you want to put your money somewhere else? And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing that's going to be missing right now is, you know, is investing it in, and maybe not, but like, I think truly investing in people is the way to go with this and believing in people. You know, during the pandemic, we got a great contracting job, like doing lighting for a facility. And I called in all of these roadies from across the country, that were out of work. And I, you know, wanted to pay them more than I could. And I did. And it was all over my budget and I didn't give a shit. I did it because they deserved it and they needed, I not only trusted them to get the job done, but I knew the fact that it would be appreciated all around between all of us, because sometimes you just got to know that there's somebody there for you, even when you don't, you know, realize it. And one of the things that I'm grateful and fortunate for with the Blue Ridge team is that they're allowing me to bring them some of the relationships that I've had for great workers in the industry to come work for the festival now, because we're going to need them. And I've been very fortunate in the fact that they've been interviewing all these people that I've had great relationships with. And I know that there'll be an A-list team that's going to be there and they'll love it and they're going to kill it. But you know, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you know, whether it's Josh Balls or Chris Jones or myself, I think the one thing that the three of us really have a commonality with is to, you know, it's not about money. I mean, some of us have more money than others, but you know, regardless of which, that's just by the fortune of your business. But it's really about people and what, like, there's a book written by Robert Kiyosaki called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And he had a line in it and this was one of my first entrepreneurial books I ever read. And it said, people that achieve great wealth have an obligation to return that wealth to society. And I never forgot that as long as, you know, from when I read that book, because if you have so much money and it just sits in an account and your entire neighborhood is, you know, decimated around you, what good are you doing for anybody? And I can't always give money in some regards, but I'll give something out of my business or I'll give something out of my time or, you know, or like I said, I'll give money where I can. And that ultimately, I think is what makes the great entrepreneurs out there is the fact of the ones that honestly want to better the community by all avenues possible. And the ones that, like, again, it's not who's there for you when you're on top. It's there for you when you're on bottom. That's ultimately what it comes down to. And I think that's one lesson that the pandemic should have taught all of us.
Right. You're a very wise man, John Phillips.
I drink a lot of root beer.
Must be the fucking root beer.
You know, and honestly, like, you know, I'm very grateful, like I said, for those relationships, John. You know, it's, I hope you, if anything from this podcast that, you know I watch a lot of these. You know, you've interviewed a lot of friends that I've had, acquaintances, people I don't know. And I think that's a very fortunate thing for you is that you have relationships. And that's ultimately what it comes down to for everybody. You just never know. And right. The relationships really matter. And if anything, I hope that people forge more of them, not for the fact of economic, but for the fact of, you know, your own betterment.
Sure. And I was going to say, on top of all these things you're doing, your most important, and I'm going to speak for you because I know that this is true. The most important thing and most important job you have is, you know, being a father to your two boys and, you know, your fiance and eventually soon to be wife. Am I missing anything else? Like, did we miss anything that you're doing that I don't know about that I skimmed over?
I mean, something's going to pop up at some point, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, that's, I think that goes back to something that is, listen, my kids are my biggest blessing and they're ultimately my legacy. I hope that one day they learn the value of everything that I've learned the value from, not just from my successes, but from my mistakes. And I think they need to learn, they need to have just as many mistakes, because honestly, if they don't have any mistakes, they're not going to learn anything whatsoever. I have a lot of value for people with all the things that I do. And I, you know, I hope that my life changes at least 3 or 4 more times from this. You know, I feel like it's like the Joe Dirt thing. It's like, life's a garden, dig it. You know, like,
you pulled out Joe Dirt. Joe Dirt Day. Don't try and church it up, son.
You know, I don't want to lead a life where I'm just doing the same thing over and over and over again, because quite honestly, the definition of that is insanity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to keep doing things that are different and moving me forward. Like, I've played in bands. I've worked in festivals. I've been a tour manager. I've been a business owner. I worked for a weed company. Like,
I forgot about that. Yeah.
I worked for Heavygrass doing as a production director for that company. And I know so much about cannabis. It's not even funny. And
Governor Wolf, if you're listening to this podcast,
legalize it.
It happen.
Get it over with.
Stop already. God.
Like, just stop.
I'm going to say one thing and I'm going to get off of it because I don't want to get into it. But what pisses me off so much, I think it was like 2014. I could be wrong with the date, so don't hold me to that. But I remember him saying, you know, let's just sit back and we're going to wait and figure out, you know, or watch what Colorado does and watch and see what the other states that are, you know, doing it, how they handle it. Guy, it's been 7 years. You know what they did? They made a lot of fucking money for their states.
I've been to those states. I've been to those countries, and everybody says it's like, you're going to legalize weed and all this shit's going to happen and blah, 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 and crime's going to, no, it doesn't. Like, Canada's just fine, you know, except for parts of Vancouver. They got a heroin problem in that area. That's a whole other, that's up there. And, you know, when it comes to those drugs, I only wish the best on people to get better. But
yeah, absolutely.
You know, any state that has it legalized, like, you know, it's fine.
We're losing out.
Old expression, 3 guys walk into a bar, they have 5 drinks, they start a fight. 3 guys walk into a room, they have 3 joints, they start a band.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, I'm not good at it. I don't want it legalized so that I could partake in it, because I'm not good at it. I want it so, you know, we can get tax revenue, we can, you know, put money towards schools and help the homeless and things like that. Listen, I live in Pennsylvania. I don't plan on moving out of Pennsylvania. So I want the state that I live in to be better. That's all I want. And I think that's an avenue. And it's funny, he didn't start pushing the envelope until COVID happened, when like a lot of, you know, financial strain, even more than it was prior to that. And now it's a big push. Now we got to do it. Well, buddy, guess what? It's too late.
Well, I mean, you know, John, like, this is a conversation for all other time, but I will say this. It's like, you know, a lot of people will claim and say it's a gateway drug, or they'll claim and say, you know, what if somebody gets behind the wheel or this and that? Like, listen, you've already got drivers behind the wheel and there's laws that are for it. I don't believe in that either. I think alcohol is so much more destructive than marijuana is.
Absolutely.
And I also believe the fact that, you know, I don't believe that it's a gateway drug, because if you're going to use that argument, then you better use the same thing for alcohol, and you better use the same thing for cigarettes on top of that as well. And cigarettes
or pills
are not good for you. So there's
fucking. Or pills.
Or exactly, you know, I think at this point it's like, you know, you have to cherry pick for what you really want to like harp on. You know, that's almost like the same thing when you talk about a vaccine. Like some people want to get a vaccine, some people don't, because they're like, well, it's not tested yet. And I'm the same guy that's sitting there and I'm like, but you eat 10 cheeseburgers a day, you know, like, you know, you drink 2 liters of soda. It's like, oh, you know, that's not natural. It shouldn't go on your body. And be like, you're wearing makeup made from baby seals. Like, you know, yeah, you know, I don't want to hear it. You know, that's kind of the thing. It's like everything's got a narrative. Drink more fucking root beer.
Just drink more fucking root beer. More of this podcast is drink more FM root beer.
As it should be. Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you what, Popko. When we get it out, I will find a way for Parler to sponsor your podcast.
You heard it here first, everybody. I've got a sponsor.
I will wholeheartedly send it down that way. No issue. We will find a way.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Applied Botanics, as well as Keller's Lawn Care Services, LLC in Exeter. If you need lawn care, get it done there.
If you need lawn it's a good rhyme. I like it.
It's like my job. I should be a professional podcaster. It's like Absolutely. I wrote commercials before, or made ads for newspapers.
Amazing.
I also print stuff on shirts now. So if you or any of your friends need t-shirts, Axel Rad Screen Printing, I got you.
Might be calling you tomorrow. Just so you know.
I mean, we could probably make some sick ass shirts, man, for Parler.
We'll talk.
All right. Well, dude, thank you for your time. I think I kept you longer than I planned, but it's always great talking to you. I mean, you're a staple in Northeastern Pennsylvania. So I'm glad there's people like you here, you know, pushing things forward, MCR Productions and the bands that you're helping kind of bring up from this area and expand their footprint. Parler Root Beer, Parler Beverages. I mean, you're always doing something. I don't know when you sleep. I haven't figured out when you sleep. So I failed in my mission tonight, but end of the day, it was good talking to you.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
Hopefully I'll see you soon.
You will.
All right, man. Take care.
You too.
All right, we'll see you. Bye-bye.